What if the future ahead is bigger than you can envision right now? Well, that's the story of my next guest.
This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life.
Well, happy holidays, and I'm back. And I came on here a few weeks ago saying I'm going to show up every week. And guess what? Last week I didn't. And I want to say A for effort, if you know the effort that I made last week. I spent all weekend at a soccer tournament in Massachusetts outside in 45-degree weather, half of it being completely in rain. Why do we do this? That is going to be another podcast sometime soon. Stay tuned. I'm doing some research on mental health and sports. But for now, happy holidays. We're back. And I hope all of you are doing okay. I hope you're doing the best that you can, and you recognize that that fluctuates on a daily basis and on a weekly basis, depending on what sort of things happen to pop up in our life. And I hope that you're giving yourself some grace in this season for so many reasons, but one, because we do a lot. Do you ever sit at the end of your day and think, not just, okay, what do I have to do? What did I not get done? But how much did I do today? I have tried to be mindful of asking myself that question and actually recognizing what did get done and why what didn't get done didn't get done, because I was doing what did get done. And sometimes, of course, we just shut down. I asked this of my sister, who's a pediatrician and who also has an 11-month-old. I said, do you ever have so much to do that you don't do anything? And she goes, yeah, that's usually when I watch movies. So know if that's you, you're not alone. I'm so excited for our next guest. He is a friend of mine. He's become a dear friend of mine and my husband, Ed, and just a wonderful, great, funny guy. And please look at the notes on this podcast when you're done and watch his TED Talk. It really was so beautiful and powerful. And I called him the day after to ask him to be on the podcast because I wanted to hear more and I wanted him to tell more of his story. Because what you see on the TED Talk is kind of in the middle of his journey, or really at right now, where he is right now, but it didn't look like this several years ago. So that's what I wanted him to talk about. So my friend Tim Washer is a keynote speaker and event MC, and he's written for shows like Saturday Night Live, James Corden. He works with IBM and has written for those executives as well. His comedy work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and you've seen him on some really great commercials. There's a Dunkin' Donuts commercial that I love, and he's been on, I think it was a cell phone commercial with Catherine Zeta-Jones. But he is a very accomplished person. And to me, what is even more incredible about him is his humility and his willingness to learn and grow and always seek the Lord in everything that he does. So I'm excited for you to hear this conversation. I'm going to circle back at the end and tell you what I got from it as I listen back. So here is my conversation with my friend, Tim Washer. Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Nero, I've been trying to get on your show for like 16 years now.
Don't lie. It's only been in existence for like 3 years. But have I ever interviewed you before?
No, I think you did a test interview and you said, no, thanks. No, this is not going to work.
I did not. Well, now's your time. And I told you the reason I had you on, because yesterday you sent me your TED Talk that you did, and I watched it, and I thought, this is so good. I need more people to hear this. It was, one, you're funny. You're so funny. And it was so wise and relatable. And I think so many of us, especially in our adult life, we never put ourselves in the place of, it's harder to be vulnerable as you're older, right? We can be vulnerable in terms of communication and relationships. We kind of have to do that. But to put yourself in a place where you're trying new things or you're stepping into opportunities that you may not feel qualified for is another type of vulnerability, right? Because we don't want to look stupid as an adult. We haven't done that since middle school or high school, right? So
that's right.
There was so much that you said, but let's just start with this. In 1 week, in the same week, I should say, you not only did a TED Talk, but you ran the New York Marathon. Like, talk about overachieving.
That's an adjective I would never use. I would never use to describe myself.
I know,
but that was a yeah that was a yes. So November 1st. So you know, it's a 3-hour drive up to Boston, and then spent the night there. We had a dinner before, and then spent the night and did the TED Talk, and then drove back late that night, and then I guess 4 days later that was the marathon. So it wasn't, it was packed. It was a packed week. Yeah, it was definitely a packed week. And I think, I think God arranged all this. I mean, the TED Talk, it was.
How?
So there was, I can't remember what it was, but maybe a few months earlier, I just got this sense like I needed to do, there was a task, I forget if it was reaching out to somebody by text. Something like that. I just felt like God was saying, do this. And it wasn't an audible voice or anything like that. I just felt like, okay, I need to reach out to this person. So I did that. And when I did, like later that afternoon, a good friend of mine, Laura Seifert, reached out and said, hey, I want to have you on my podcast. And then I think the next day I heard from my friend Nick Morgan about this TED Talk. And I thought, okay. It just had this feeling like, oh, okay, I was obedient in this very small task. And then here are these doors that are opening. Mm. So there was that. The other part about
the
whole marathon thing.
I just talked about that on my last podcast, how we have
to. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, with the small.
That is so important. That's every big door that's open is started with just a very small step of being faithful.
For me,
and
too.
Usually it is it's something like sending an email, but it's like a nudge that I feel like, okay, God's telling me to reach out to this person. I don't know why, but I'm going to do it. And you know, the marathon was also something that God told me to do. I went last year. I went to the marathon, and I went with our the Ridgefield Bicycling Club. We went out there and. We were allowed to ride our bikes on the course. So we show up at the starting line at 6 a.m. You know, obviously all the streets are already closed for the marathon. And we just get to ride it along with New York Cycling Club. And I remember riding that and going over the 59th Street Bridge, which is so painful, even on a bike. And I thought, man, what idiot would actually run this course? And turns out I was that idiot. So later that day, I heard from a few people who said, oh, yeah, you got to run the marathon. I thought, yeah. And then a friend of mine who's a comedian, Laura Green, put up this post on Instagram, said she never trained more than 30 miles a week. And I thought, OK, I could do that. Hmm. And then later I get a call from Lance Finn, who, you know, our youth pastor at Walnut Hill. And Lance says, hey, I'm the chaplain for the marathon, for the New York City Marathon. And I lead the prayer service. And if you come, and I'd love to have you come and speak at the prayer service, and you'll get an entry into the marathon. And when that note came, I knew God was saying, I want you to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that had nothing to do with the marathon. What happened is I ended up meeting this wonderful coach, this woman, Heather Knightpeck. I mean, she's crazy. She's so amazing. She won her age group, her division in the Boston Marathon 3 times. And this year she set the record, the world record. She broke it for the half marathon in her division. So she's a super intense. She's a super intense coach. And I thought, she's not going to be for me, because that's not, I'm not, you know, that's not the fit I'm looking for. But I felt like God was also saying, reach out to Heather. And Heather knew exactly. She accepted me. She took me on as a client, and she helped me build evidence that I can do things, that I can set goals again, that I can have confidence to accomplish these kind of things. So I think all of this was about God just getting me the help I needed, the support I needed to get people to say, yeah, you can set a goal and go do it. And I, you know, confidence had been just totally wiped out from my childhood and then 20 years of a divorce.
Yeah, it was tough. I want to talk about that just in terms of identity, right? Because our identity and think about ourselves often holds us back from the things that we can do with our life and often the things that God wants for us in our life. And you talked about that so beautifully on your TED Talk, but even like 2 years ago, when did we meet? 2-3 years ago?
2019. At the comedy show. I met you and Ed.
That's right. A while back. Yeah. So at that point, if I had said to you, Tim, in your future, you're going to be a TEDx speaker and you're going to run the New York Marathon at that time, what would you have thought?
I would have laughed at you, politely, of course. But right. I really would have. I would have said, "Hey, that's." I would have thought that's kind of you to say, but you're being flattering, because you don't know who I am, and you don't know
who did you think you were at that time.
I still thought, like I talked about in the TED Talk. You know, I mentioned this moment where my therapist, who's helping us get divorced, says, "Look, you believe you're unworthy of love." And as soon as she said that, I knew she was right. And I would still at that point when you and I met, I still felt that. Like Craig Horn was really, he was mentoring me and he was really working with me on saying, listen, man, you got to understand when you walk into a room, people are happy to see you. You know, you make people laugh. And that was foreign to me at the time. Mm-hmm. But he was a big help in doing that. So yeah, the identity and Nero, it's funny. So I finished the marathon, I guess that was about 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And my coach said, listen, you need to keep walking. Don't do anything for the first couple of days. Begin to walk, do walk for a mile, 2 miles. Well, there was so much travel and stuff. I just wasn't able to, I did not do the walking as I should have. Mm-hmm. And I went out and ran my first workout. It was just an easy 25-minute run, and it crushed me. I did this like 4 weeks after the marathon, and I couldn't do it. It was so discouraging, incredibly discouraging. And then I just kind of gave up for a while. And actually, today was my first run again. I met my trail running buddies, and we went and ran at 6:15 in the morning, and it was great.
Cold.
It was 27 degrees in Ridgefield. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It was 27 degrees. And but I sent my coach a note and I said, you know what? I have to be very careful. I need to post guard, as Brian Mowry says, I need to post guard and be careful that my old identity doesn't try to get its claws in me and pull me back into thinking, no, you're not a marathoner.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? So I think one thing, it takes so much work to change your identity. And you really have to have friends surrounding you who support you in that. But then once you change your identity, you really have to be very careful not to slip back because that resistance will come after you.
It's so interesting because those roots of that old identity, especially when they start so young, like it did for you. I mean, you were basically your gift to the world is that you make people laugh. I mean, I think you have other gifts that you offer, but that is such a strength for you.
No, that's it. I think that's it. Yeah.
And even at a young age, you were told that that was bad and negative.
Yeah. Right?
And that's what God put you in the world to do. So to change that identity, those roots run deep and you do have to continually, well, for a good long while, do the work to remind yourself who you are and what you're capable of. So that is the ongoing work. I loved what you talked about in terms of following your fear. And for you, so many opportunities have come in your life when you followed your fear, which I love.
Yes.
I would love for you, even though I want people to actually go watch your TED Talk, but to talk about one of those opportunities that was the most meaningful to you or that you think of in terms of following your fear and how you did that.
Yeah. So I guess the, the one that I talk about, one of the ones that I talk about in the TED Talk is that it came through improv. And I remember when I realized that God's was wanting me to go work in comedy. I remember when that calling came. I'll never forget the moment. And I had no idea. I just had no idea what to do. I knew it was an obligation, but I did not want to pursue. I didn't want to pursue comedy. I thought it was arrogant for you to say I'm a comedian. I thought that was arrogant to say I'm a comedian, because then you're implying, hey, I think I'm funny. And so it took a long time to get over that. And then, but I didn't know how. The other thing is I had no idea how to. And a friend of mine, a woman named Melinda Schmidt, she told me about this improv troupe, this theater in New York City called Upright Citizens Brigade. And she said, oh yeah, a good buddy of mine went there. You should go check that out. And you know what I did? I didn't mention this, but I look it up online and sign up for a class. But there's this banner up that says, hey, tomorrow we need extras to shoot for a TV show we're doing. And it was called Upright Citizen Brigade. It ran on Comedy Central. And so I got a little excited. I signed up and then I called in sick. I was working as an analyst in Manhattan. And I called in sick. I said, I'm taking tomorrow off. And I went out to Long Island and I was actually in a scene with Amy Poehler, who was my improv instructor. And so that one I went for. But when I went into the class, the follow the fear moment came. And I learned follow the fear is actually an improv principle that was created by this guy named Del Close, who's the father of long form improv. And it's just this idea that, like, when something scares you, you'll have three or four different options. The option that scares you the most is where you have an obligation to run after it as fast as you can.
And why is that?
And because what Del Close was saying, it's because the reason that idea scares you is because it represents new frontier. It's something you haven't explored before.
Unfamiliar.
And yes, exactly. And because it's unfamiliar and new territory for you, it has the biggest potential to yield, you know, the most beautiful outcome, whether it's a creative outcome or a career outcome, all of those things.
I love that.
Yeah. So that happened to me the first day I was in improv. I get up on this class, and all these, I'm like 30 years old. Everybody in there is in their early 20s. You know, they're all these beautiful people. They're actors. They know how to act. They've taken all these classes. And I really felt like I don't belong. You know, I just felt I definitely don't belong here. Anyway, I go into the theater. We all get up on stage. We're in a circle. We're playing this improv game where we go around and in the circle and take turns to improvise. And this is my first time. I've never done anything in improv before. So I'm really freaked out about what's coming. And I was sitting there thinking about what's going to look less humiliating. What's going to be less humiliating, you know, grabbing my backpack and walking out of that theater in front of everybody, or staying there and singing. We had to sing. And I'm glad you weren't, Nero. I've broken ties with everyone in that group. So I wouldn't have to live with this embarrassment anymore. But I ran out of time. It wasn't about being brave. I just ran out of time. And I ended up singing a song and it worked out okay.
What'd you sing?
I mean, everybody supported me.
What'd you sing?
It was Barry Manilow. It was Copacabana. So the thing is you had to sing a song that was inspired by this word, the word love.
Okay.
You didn't necessarily have to have love in there, but that's what it was. I think love's in there. Yes, okay. It is. Mm-hmm. So that was it. And I you know, it worked. I lived through it, but it really was. It was a horrifying moment for me. And I talk about the outcome there. I mean, Amy Poehler was my instructor. Of course, she wasn't Amy Poehler at the time. Right. It was like a few years before she got onto SNL.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was still Amy
Pushing Poehler. Through that fear. What's that?
She was still Amy Poehler.
She was still Amy Poehler. You're right. But I mean, not she wasn't Amy like Poehler. The famous yes. Amy Poehler that you all know.
I mean, that's crazy. So then you got to work with
it
her.
Is cra- That is, yeah. So she brought people on from the theater, and so I acted in some sketches, just background stuff, and then
on Saturday Night
wrote Live. Jokes on Saturday Night Live, yeah, and then wrote jokes for her, on Weekend Update when she got on Weekend Update with Tina Fey.
Yes.
So yeah, and that opened up all kinds of doors, you know, working on Conan, on The Onion, John Oliver, and I was so close to just saying, I don't want to deal with this, and walking out. And it was just, yeah, it's become a way of life for me now.
It has. And that's what I saw in your TED Talk, was that in those moments where you felt, okay, I am not qualified to do this, I can't do this, that it was like God met you in those moments and made mm-hmm. it possible, and also showed you that you could, that you're gifted for it. But I was curious to, because it has become a way of life for you, what do you feel like God was trying to tell you in that experience? And then you've had other ones that are similar that also led to big things in your life. What do you feel like God was trying to show you?
In that particular experience, he was showing me to trust me. Mm. Trust me. That's what he was saying.
Hmm.
Because I ended up there. I mean, I really think God, he does a lot of work with us through our friends, through the people he brings into our lives. And so I know it wasn't an accident that I ended up at that theater. And that just came from talking to my friend Melinda and telling her, oh yeah, I'm going to do comedy now. And for my friends, to them, it all made sense. They were like, because they've seen me, they've known me for years. And it all made sense to them. And some friends have encouraged me to do amateur nights at stand up. I mean, when I was in high school, and I never did that. You know, I never did that. But this time I knew it was no longer an obligation. And I also knew I'd been hiding from it.
Mm.
But it's like the hiding from it and not going, like not being part of the Harvard Mafia. I mean, I was like, how am I going to go to SNL? It's like, God, you don't understand, you know, to get into comedy, you know, you really need to go to Harvard and, you know, meet these guys. And because that's who runs most of, or a good part of it, hmm. of like writing for SNL. And I'm just in my mind, I have all these excuses. It's like, well, God, you don't understand how comedy works in the career, you know, all this nonsense that God, and I just felt he was so patient with me. And the fact that I was like Gideon in the fact that I was afraid, and the fact that I was trying to talk him out of it and tell him, no, you don't understand. He just always had grace for me, always mm-hmm. had grace. And all of the complaints and the reasons I gave him, he showed me that with him, it didn't matter.
Yes.
That yeah. he'd find a different way that there was no way I could have anticipated. No way I could have anticipated it.
That's the Isaiah 55, that God's ways are higher than our ways. And I've thought about that all the time. As I was listening to your TED Talk, I was just in the middle of listening to some sermons on Joseph. And the sermons were talking about how many tests that God put Joseph to refine his character, right? And one thing I saw with you before the doors opened for you, you were brought to a point of total humility and therefore dependence, yes. right? I mean, you get to a point where you're like, okay, I don't feel like I can do this on my own, but I'm going to do it because this is what I feel like I'm supposed to do right now. And that humility is what opens doors. So
yes.
it was interesting. I was listening to that sermon, and then I listened to your talk, and I thought, oh, that's how it's worked for Tim too.
Yeah, that was a dark place, Nero. That was a dark place. I just had this image of being at the end of my rope and just in this dark place of despair. I've been in darker places since, but yeah, I was in a dark place, and I just didn't want to, when I went and auditioned for that commercial, I know a lot of people think, what's a big deal? You've auditioned for like 7 commercials before. Just go do it another time. But I couldn't. I was like, I don't need, I cannot take this embarrassment right now in my life. Mm. I have no room for it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I thought about, like any actor, you know, would say, this is just go in and do it. And I know now you go in and do it. And then you walk out of the room and you forget about it. Mm-hmm. You don't worry about whether you're going to get it or not. Just forget about it. That's the best thing to do. That's the healthiest thing to do. But I was at this place where I was like, I can't take this. I can't take it anymore. I can't take the humility. I have no room.
Or the rejection. Yeah. Too.
And it is rejection, but it's, you know, it's only with a handful of people who don't know you mm-hmm. and who are never going to see you again. So you know, most people would say, it doesn't matter. Just go do it. But man, I was just at a point where I couldn't, mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. And then I just, that was a Holy Spirit moment. I really felt God came to me and said, look, I'll meet you here. Just trust me this time. And so I did. I said, okay, look, I'm going to do this one more time. Mm. And I'm going to trust that if it goes horribly wrong, then I'm never going to do it again. I'll find something else to do. Yeah.
I love how it doesn't have to make sense for God to do it. It doesn't have to make sense. And oftentimes, you know, like you've said, you and I have had this conversation just about how things have happened for me too. I'm not the most qualified for some of the things that God's called me to. I mean, especially when it came to a publishing deal. I literally Googled, I sat down after I signed my contract and I Googled how to write a book. Cause I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm like, what did I just do? You know? But it's often those moments, because there's humility, because there's dependence, where God shows up and it doesn't have to make sense, right? We try and logically figure it out. Okay, this has to happen in order for this prayer to be answered, or this has to happen in order for this opportunity to appear. But that isn't
how
God works. He's more concerned with the condition of our character, the condition of our heart, who we are becoming as people. And then the opportunity is easy for him.
Yes. Yes.
That's
exactly right. Yes. I feel the same way. I feel the same way. And he always, I think so many times the if you just looked at things from a worldly standpoint and said, what were your biggest moments of success in your career? All of those would all be moments and milestones where I can point to and tell you, give you facts on how I know this was not my doing, how I know that I can prove to you that I was not qualified, that it wasn't based on my own skill, that there was something that was miraculous that happened. And I think God, I'm grateful. He's always shown me that, because I've learned not to rely on myself. I learned it's about just trusting him. It's about getting out of the boat and saying, okay, I'm just going to show up and I'm going to ask for your guidance and I'll follow your lead here.
But you still have done the work. Yes, agreed. You still have done the work.
I've done the work. I show up. Yeah. And that, listen, I am so proud of myself.
Yes.
Yes. I am proud of myself for showing up mm-hmm. because for so much, almost all of my life, I wouldn't. I'd find an excuse. I'd believe the lies and I'd talk myself out of it. And now I am really proud of myself for showing up. Mm. Yeah.
Looking at your life now and the things that you've accomplished, could you have dreamed this 10 years ago?
Oh no, absolutely not. And I would have, you know, it's funny. I would have never, you know, God totally tricked me into coming up to New York City, because I was in Texas. I would have never, I was certain I'd never, one thing I knew is I did not want to leave Texas. Mm. And I love Texas, and I would never have taken the risk to come up in New York City. But what happened is one of my professors who I had been a TA for, who I trusted very dearly, and a guy who really looked out for me, a mentor, he told me about this job with a guy he knew in Manhattan to go work as an analyst. And I was just, the offer was come up here and work for us for a year, learn the business, and then go back to Austin and open up an office for us there. So I was like, okay, sure, I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's God. I know God shaped that for me. I know he shaped this opportunity where he knew I would say yes. Mm-hmm. He made it temporary for me. And we came up here, and then the obligation of comedy. I mean, I realized the calling of comedy, I should say, came up. And I was like, okay, let's stay in New York.
It's amazing because you came up thinking it was for one reason, but it was so many other reasons, and really just one door to walk through to get to others.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I look at your life, and it to me, it illustrates that God has bigger dreams for us than we can dream for ourselves.
Absolutely. I would have never, not in a million years, would ever thought I'd work in comedy. No, of course not. I would have stayed in Texas and just, you know, had a job in marketing, and that would have been fine. But I my faith has grown for sure. I don't know if my faith would have ever matured like this. I mean, God would find another, he'll find a second plan for us. I know that, but I don't think there'd be this much joy in it. You know, if I'd done it my way.
And that's the thing. We try and orchestrate as much as we can orchestrate, right? There's a control piece of that. And especially if you're fearful, for many people, the antidote to fear is control. If I can control it, then I don't need to fear it. I'm not vulnerable.
That's right.
Any longer. And I think that if we can just look at certain things that we're praying about and know, it's obviously not this simple, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know, that is something that God can do and work on and work through. And if he's not doing it in your way, it's because his ways are higher. And there's something else that you're to go through so that when whatever that opportunity is, and maybe it's going to be even bigger than what you are asking for, you'll be able to walk through it. You'll be able to handle it and find joy.
That's right.
Hopefully.
Yes. And I still, you know, I still am learning the balance of how much do I need to be doing on my own? Mm-hmm. And like there was a time, you know, 16 years ago that nothing was, I was like, I want to go become a public speaker for corporate events. Mm-hmm. Nothing was really happening. And I thought, okay, I need to do some more work here. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying I'm going to work harder. But I reached out to people and I found out about this connection to go. I went to Vegas. I got into this thing. I had to pay for it. You audition and then you have to pay for the opportunity, you know, and to go down and get to perform in front of like hundreds of corporate event planners. So I did that all on my own, you know, and the comedy didn't work. The stage presence is what I needed. I wasn't able to use PowerPoint, which I wanted to do. It did not move easily as if God were in it. And I knew God wasn't in it. I knew this is something I was trying to make happen out of being impatient. And nothing came of that. It was a huge waste of a couple thousand bucks. And nothing came up. In fact, I looked bad in front of, I think I probably closed a lot of doors just because I didn't have what I need. And I got anxious about it. And I remember that every time that I'm thinking, I'm getting impatient. I'm going to go try to make this happen. And I remember that moment and that in that lesson and think, no, let me be still and pray and trust God is going to show up for me. So but it's still a balance because he wants us to work. We have to be a good steward of the gifts he's given us. But I think we also need to ask for discernment about when do you want me to wait, Lord?
Yeah.
When do you want me to just be still?
Yeah. And I think we know that when we're moving because of an anxiety or urgency that comes from impatience, I think we can sense that if we are discerning and even just aware of ourselves, you know, is this motivated because I feel like God's calling me to do this? Or am I trying to force something or make something happen because, you know, I'm not content. I'm not patient. Have I gotten some confirmation? And I know it's not always clear, And sometimes you know, you got to take those steps and do it. And maybe it's not the right thing, but then God will meet you in it as well in some way. Maybe there's something you have to grow and learn through that. So sometimes I think you find that after the fact. But I actually,
that's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Well, part of it is, I think a lot of that comes with maturity, in your relationship with Jesus. And I think for me, what I've learned is I have to get those things out of my life that are a distraction. Like, for example, if I'm, there've been times since the divorce where I've dated and I've learned, like Craig Horn has told me, you need to take some time off, take a year off from dating. So I'm no longer speaking to him now because of that. He said a year. I'm like, are you kidding me? But when you take that time off and you don't worry about, and you don't worry about like trying to go out on a date, trying to find somebody to go out on a date with, it frees up so much. And I just became such a better listener, meaning for God's voice. And I was so much more present with God and with my kids. You know, there are things like, and I'm going through a series like that now, a season like that now too. I just feel like God's saying, just, you know, you just need to be still right now and be with me and be with your kids. And you need to write a book, but you know, so don't get distracted. So there are things like, man, all the great TV shows, so many of them are just, you know, now there's an anti-hero, and it's like, it just, at least it's a lot of images that you probably shouldn't be looking at. When you give up those things and you say, okay, God, I hear you. You want me to give this up? It becomes so much more easy, I believe, to discern when he's telling you to wait. And when it's so much easier to identify when something's coming in, that's a temptation to say, you know what? That's a temptation. I'm going to say no. Or if you feel like I got to go hustle and get this, you, it's easier for me to recognize, no, I don't. Let me just be still. Let me go for a walk. Let me get together with, you know, good friends, community friends.
Essentially, and eliminating distraction, eliminating things that you know are not aligned with your values or beliefs.
Yes.
Right. So that you have more clarity, more peace of mind, and then allow for more of the presence of God and to hear from God, which I think is very true. When I was listening to your TED talk, I have to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this. I didn't tell you before. I had a little aha moment when I was listening to your TED talk.
Really?
Yes. Yes. And
well, what was it?
I'll tell you. I'm not going to.
No, let's join us next week.
So I'm listening to your TED talk and I'm hearing you talk about your story and your experiences and how very beautifully, respectfully, gracefully you wove in your faith. And it was very clear. It was not preachy, but it was just so evident by the way that you conducted yourself, the way you made your decisions in your life, and also undeniably the way that God showed up for you. And at the end of your TED talk, what sat with me was, I shouldn't be praying for opportunities. I should be praying for a testimony. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't pray for opportunities, right? We absolutely should. But to understand that sometimes God's opportunities will look different than what we have imagined for ourselves. But if we're praying for a testimony, we're praying that God is evident throughout the course of our life and in the opportunities that we've stepped into. And that's what I took away from your TED talk. Everything you said was great, but the way the Holy Spirit spoke to me was through that. You know, you pray for a testimony and then the right opportunities will show up for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's not what I said, but that's okay.
But your TED talk was a testimony. It was.
No, I know. I'm joking with you. I think that's beautiful. I think that's beautiful. Yeah. And I'm glad I was able to be part of something that the Holy Spirit can use for sure.
And I think, Tim, Ted Theodore, which you'll understand if you watch his TED talk. This is just the beginning for you. It really is. Because as you step into the identity of who really God created you to be, is when I believe those doors are going to get bigger, that he's calling you to walk through, that he's going to give you. And you've been faithful. You've been faithful to do, even in those moments of vulnerability when you thought, I couldn't do much more. You were faithful to do what you were called to do. And that, I know that that's going to be rewarded. This is just beginning for you.
Thank you for that blessing. I'll take that as a blessing. Thank you very much.
David.
Yeah.
Receive.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I really got a lot out of it, not just listening to his TED Talk, but even just talking to him now. And as I was listening to this conversation back, there were certain things that I took from it that I want to remember as I keep going in my week today. One is that you never know where God is going to take you. You think he's bringing you to some place or to some person for one thing, but that can just be a door to other things. Now, that's not to say we go and do certain things because we're waiting for that door. I think we go and step into certain opportunities and into certain relationships because we're there to be loving and obedient to God and to give of ourselves what we have to give. And in that, I know that God honors that obedience, that faithfulness, that heart that you might have for certain people and situations. God will honor that. And you never know where God's going to take you. God's dream for Tim was far bigger than what Tim could possibly dream for himself. And I think that's the case with so many of us. Two, I love what he said about his friends that were around him, his coach, people who reminded him of his potential and his identity. And I think that's a big takeaway for all of us. Be careful who you surround yourselves with. What is the energy like? Are they negative? Do you have people of faith who believe like you, who you can borrow their faith at times where you don't have it? And are you around people who know who you are and who believe in your potential and who see you for that rather than people who bring you down? Think about who you spend your time with, because it changes the way that we think about ourselves and then what we end up doing in the world. I love how he said that he was working out in his mind all these things that had to happen. He was talking about writing for Saturday Night Live and how he didn't go to Harvard. Those are the people who end up in those opportunities. And he was making these excuses as to why certain things couldn't happen in his life, because what we know about those opportunities didn't make sense when he looked at his life. And what I just came away with was that it doesn't have to make sense for God to do something, for God to work in an opportunity, for God to bring an opportunity. It doesn't have to make sense. We just have to follow our own path and do the next right thing and do it well, the way we're called to do it. And then let God be God in however he wants to do it. And the other thing he said was that God is looking for obedience and a willingness, not ability. There were so many opportunities that he didn't feel like he had the ability or he was as good as the other people trying. But he went with an obedient heart and an open heart and a willingness to just show up and trust God in those opportunities. And where are the moments in our lives where we're being called to do that? I think it's so important that we begin to attune ourselves to those times where we might not feel like we're enough or we're good enough, but we're called to it. So we step into it, trusting that God is going to meet us there. Let me tell you, that happens to me every time. Every time I'm on TV, I just say, God, please show up for me. Please speak through me. And sometimes when I watch those things back, I'm like, wow, I didn't sleep the night before. I was learning my stuff on the way there. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that God met me where I was at. And then, of course, the aha moment I had in that I'm starting to pray more for a testimony than opportunity. Trusting that if I allow God to work in whatever situation I'm in, the right opportunities will show up. So that's what I took from this podcast. And I will definitely have Tim on again. He's funny. He's a great guy. And he has such a beautiful faith about him. And God is writing his testimony. God is writing his story in a way that's more beautiful than I know he could have imagined. And I know that that gift is available to all of us. So I hope you enjoy this. Be well, live full. Happy holidays. Be nice to yourself. Give yourself grace and those around you. and I will be back next week.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.